You have found Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle, stories, and triumphs and successes of business owners across the land. Past episodes of the Authentic Business Adventures program can be found on the podcast link at drawincustomers.com. We are coming to you remotely, but typically from the Sun Prairie Community Radio Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, entrepreneur, author, speaker, and helpful coach to small business owners across the country. Today, we're welcoming slash preparing to learn from Mark McNally, the CEO and founder of the Ashford Group. Mark, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing well, James. I'm here in the office and getting things done. Looking forward to yet some more this afternoon and, you know, be able to take the weekend in stride.
That doesn't sound like a terrible idea.
No.
It seems like a little bit different world now. I just want to make sure well, I guess, has your business been affected by this whole COVID thing, or has it been pretty tame?
It has been affected.
Okay.
There are a number of, in my line of work, we call them mandates. I mean, you have a project where you're assisting, usually the seller, with the sale of their business. These can shut down in a hurry once the capital markets start to shrink.
Uh-huh.
And at this time, everybody is, you know, we're trying to get through the paycheck protection, but as far as companies going out and buying other companies or individuals buying companies, that activity has slowed down considerably.
It has.
Yes, well,
that's interesting.
It will come back, but there's uncertainty. If you're going to get a loan today from a bank, it's going to be for an operating company that's been in business. It's not going to be for somebody who hasn't been in business before.
Sure.
And,
all right. That's fair.
Yeah.
I imagine the banks themselves are probably just on the verge of overwhelmed with all of the applications for the PPP loan. And I imagine some SBA type loans to just help businesses stay afloat during all this.
I talked to a bank yesterday, I won't mention the name, and they're in Madison, and they had 300, now this was a bank out of Madison, had 300 applications that did not get processed for the paycheck protection. So they're hoping that something is still going to happen.
Sure.
But it goes to show you the amount of concern that is out there and how this has affected so many different enterprises across just about every industry classification.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In one way or another, right? Even even radio interviews are challenging now.
I'm sure they are. I'm sure they are. There is with business today, we tend to get into these situations and they occur about every 10 years. I'm
sure.
Somewhat a student of economic history. I kind of like it. And I go back, you know, I think about when I graduated from school, you know, the whole Tax Reform Act of 86 and what was going on with Ronald Reagan when he was in office and how long it took for that to really kick in. And it saved, the economy was struggling. And
sure.
It helped out considerably. You go to 2000, and well, in 2001, we had 9/11, big shutdown. And then, 10 years later, we're up against 2009, 2010, and you had the recession. So, this is an unusual situation, Corona 19, but what's not unusual is the extent of it, and we have these massive corrections that seem to take place about every 10 years.
Sure, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
Sure, it's interesting. I remember after 9/11, I was, what was I doing? I was a printer repair technician at the time, and it was one of those things that happened that you didn't know how to react. Like, you weren't happy about it. You just wanted to know, how do you go about your day-to-day life now? And I remember there were offices that were closed we had some clients that were closed for a week, but they just didn't know what to do. There was just apprehension or confusion, I guess.
There is, and there's a lot of concern. I think that what we're in right now dwarfs what we had in 9/11. You could take that. You could take the Great Recession, and you could probably bring, even Pearl Harbor to get us back to perhaps what it looked like societally in 1929 with the Great Depression.
Right.
You take all these combined, and you do have these. There is no getting around it. And no matter how much in the way of government regulation that the congresspersons, the U.S. Senate, what they try to come up with, there'll be something that'll happen 10 years from now that it'll be new and we haven't seen it before, but it'll happen.
Sure. Something to look forward to or not.
Or not. Yeah. So, sales of businesses are still going on. We have a couple that we're working with on generational transfers. This is from usually the owners, the founders of the business to the next generation, although it can be, getting into the grandchildren or the great-grandchildren. That activity is still there. There are owners that want to see that done. And we represent usually the sellers in that to try to help their children purchase a business. On the sales of the business, we're very involved with that as well. That is going to be, either the business brokerage or merger and acquisition activity. And you're selling the business to somebody else, outsider, that's going to be coming in and taking this over and running it.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Just so the listeners who may not know you know what the Ashford Group is, can you just give us a quick spiel about what is the Ashford Group?
Sure. We're a business transaction specialist firm. We assist enterprises, companies, usually small, and I would define small as companies that have a net worth. It's not their gross sales, it's the business value. It's somewhere in the range of 400,000 to about 14 million. Now, have we done things that are larger than that? Oh, yes, much, much larger. And occasionally we get into smaller projects where maybe it's only 100,000. We just took one on yesterday where it's very small. And we'll be able to help out. I think we can make a difference here in a short amount of time. I've been doing
Sure.
this for over 30 years. I'm
Wow.
licensed in this line of work. Besides being a CPA here in Wisconsin, I'm a certified valuation analyst. I am a real estate broker, and I am a certified merger and acquisition advisor. So I've got four appellations that I rely upon to help me do this type of work.
Nice. That sounds pretty sweet. Now, it looks like you started this, right?
I did. I have been doing this work, as I said, for over 30 years. I started off as a CPA practicing here in Wisconsin, and I had my own firm. And I remember I got bought in by an individual who, of all things, he started with me. He was selling firewood, and he needed some tax advice. And I gave it to him preparation. Then he came to me and he had an opportunity to buy a business, and it was established. It was in a regulated area, and I really didn't know that much about it. In fact, there wasn't anybody even teaching this. So I went out and bought myself a bunch of books, and I would read these things at night so that I knew what to do the next day. And
Wow.
I'm not exaggerating. I helped him buy that business, and 10 years later, he came to me and he said, "Mark, I want to sell this." There were some health concerns, and I said, "Okay." He put the whole project on my desk, and we were able to get this accomplished with a It was a publicly held company out of Canada that purchased it. So I have done everything from, builders, developers, food service, healthcare, auto, light trucks, technology, food service, heavy trucks, you name it. There's only one or two areas that we stay away from. We don't do any work with financial institutions. In the old days, they called them banks and savings and loans. Today, they're banks and credit unions.
Sure.
I've had three opportunities, but when they come along every 10 years, that's not exactly what I'd call a regular type of business. And
sure.
We don't work with publicly held when they're selling. I mentioned earlier an example where they were buying, and that's okay. But when they're selling, we can't put down $500 million of insurance like a Goldman Sachs or,
sure,
any of the firms out of, New York City, Wall Street,
J.P.
Morgan. So we do work with them, but they have to be buying rather than selling.
All right. That's fair. So it sounds like you more or less fell into this, learned you liked it, and started a business doing it. Is that safe to say?
Yes. I had my own CPA firm, and I did a lot of this. And then I sold my firm. I joined up with another mid-sized firm in the Madison market called Williams Young. And then I was with Williams Young, and then we sold out to Whipfley. And they're still in business. It's a pretty good sized firm. They're national now in their scope. And I just said, I want to stay doing deals. I love putting, successes together. That just grabs me. Doing another tax return or auditing a financial statement, it's okay. But I just really get juiced on this type of work.
Sure.
So, yeah.
That is pretty cool. So tell me, I'm going to jump ahead. We'll get to your history in a little bit here. But I'm a guy, I've sold one business and helped somebody else sell another business that were tiny in comparison to what you're doing. But I want to say my favorite / most nerve-wracking part was the actual day of negotiation. And I don't know if that's typically how they go, if they're negotiated like real estate transactions are, where it's paper being emailed or faxed back and forth, or if it's an actual phone call where people are kind of negotiating back and forth, or where with my main business, the first one I sold, I was at their office and it was in person. And then they would send something to their attorney, and I'd have to okay with my attorney, and it was a 8-hour ordeal, I think. So How do deals happen? Like, tell me about the negotiation part, because that's the fun part.
Well, okay. Let me just walk you through the various steps that would take place. And again, we do seller side assistance, we do buy side assistance, and then we do just business transfers. But typically, on a sell-side mandate, you meet with the client. You got to figure out if, number one, this is going to work for you. What makes us effective is our acceptance rate is very low. I mean, we only take on about 20% of what we look at.
Oh, wow.
And, that's extremely low. But what we do is we scrub it very thoroughly. There are interviews with the ownership and the management. We are going to talk to your advisors. We'll run background searches on the company. For example, how many times have they been named as a defendant in lawsuits? Or how many times do they sue? Because that can have an impact as well. And this happens really on all types of businesses. It's not just the real large ones. We do it on the small ones. And the reason is because we want to find out where the punk wood is. Now, that's a term that, you know, I don't know if you were an outdoors kind of kid, but, you know, you'd go up to a tree when I was a little boy, and there would be parts of the tree that would be diseased. And, you know, it was already kind of mushy. You could put your finger into it. And that is what's going to kill the tree. Well, if I find punk wood, it's a euphemism, in a business, I want to know about it before we've invested a lot of time. And the reason is because we only get paid if we're successful in selling business.
All right.
It doesn't make sense to go and take on all these different type of projects, these obligations, mandates, whatever you want to call them, knowing or should have known that there are some problems. And you better know what they are. Now, if there can be a lawsuit, but, you know, if you've got contractors, for instance, they're notorious. They get into this where they've got three or four lawsuits a year. You can't sell that type of business. It's just going to be very difficult. So, you know, you may have staff, personnel in your company. You know, my question then is, do we have non-competes? Are there employment agreements? What's to prevent them from just walking away? Because a buyer would be concerned about that.
Sure.
You know, all of these things we look at. So when we do take it on, we will go through, we scrub the numbers, we normalize those numbers. We're looking for all the things that, you know, maybe they were tax deductible, but, you know, to a new buyer coming in, you know, you really have to have somebody getting an $8,000 a year car allowance. Well, that was fine for the old seller, but a new buyer coming in, you know, that's cash flow. So we'll add that back. We'll get to owner's compensation. We'll get to the children if they're on the payroll. The cell phone, you know, I've seen them write off a lot of different expenses that, you know, are really, they're there, but it's owner compensation. It's just that they don't have to pay income taxes on it. So
sure.
We normalize those financial statements. Then we put together what we call a deal book. And that can be short or it can be a little long, but it's going to cover, you know, the financial statements, the balance sheet, the income statement, the tax returns. It's going to have the normalized statements showing, you know, what adjustments were made, what the cash flow is. We may talk in there about the all of the customers, or the product, or even the competition. We then go to market. We have to get non-disclosure agreements confidentiality agreements from any buyer, potential buyer, and we take that. And then we go to work. Most of our involvement is done way before we sit down to sign the papers. It's all been worked out. We know what the concerns are, and sometimes I'm even pointing out things to a buyer that I know that they are eventually going to come across it. So, you know, it's better if I say it than if we just ignore it. And
sure.
We let them know. And so I'm not saying that the final day when you're signing documents is without any tension, but it really, it's been worked out. These transactions and agreements have been put forth with all the terms and conditions reflecting, you know, meaningful thought. And
sure.
That's how we do it. So it's
how
a little different than maybe selling a house.
Sure.
You know.
Sure.
Okay.
So after you put the numbers and all that jazz together, or go through them, I guess, depending upon if you're on the buyer or seller side, how do you figure out a price, value, and how that price itself will get distributed to the owner? Like in lump sum or over the course of time or whatever.
All right. I'm going to answer that in two parts.
Okay.
The first part is, you know, the seller of the business many times has an estimation of what the value is.
Sure.
Remember earlier I was saying that 20% is our acceptance rate? Well, one of the things we look for is what is the seller of the business looking to harvest here? Okay. Not that we set the price, because we don't. The street does. You know,
right.
it's what's going on the street. Now, it's my job to know how the street is looking at transactions today, and
sure.
knowing how much can be financed. Is this going to require, you know, a 20-80% bank loan? Is there going to have to be some seller financing? Are we going to have kind of pay as you go, earnouts? You know, what are the normal metrics? So we have that. But one thing that we do look for is what the seller's estimation is of the sale price. Because if they're way out there, let's just say it's a multiple of, 14 off of EBITDA, I know we're not going to get that. We won't take the project on because your expectations are not going to be supported by the price and what we can get for you later on. So I'm
sure.
not going to waste the time. So
do you
kind of know what it is, but, you know, I make sure that, you know, for the sellers, it's the street, and we have to be realistic. So, you know, today's deals, they're going to sell on the basis of how large they are. The larger, you know, the company is, the more juice will be afforded, the more turns on, usually it's EBITDA, but it could be on seller's discretionary earnings, SDE.
Okay. So just for the people that don't know, EBITDA, I know about half that acronym. So can you, can you just clarify
yeah.
for that?
Sure. SDE, seller's discretionary earnings, that is a moniker that's used in the smaller transactions. Remember what I was saying earlier, $400,000, that goes up to about $3, maybe $4 million. It doesn't go further than that. But in that case, you know, buyers are usually looking for a job. And, you know, they want a nice company to run, but it's going to be, how much can this company pay me?
Sure.
And so they're going to be on the smaller end of it. Now, the larger transactions, and they start at about $2.5 million, so there is some overlap here, but those are being sold to larger buyers, and the acronym there, EBITDA, earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. In those instances, you know, you're selling to strategic buyers, you're selling to what we call PEGs, private equity groups. We don't really deal with hedge funds, but, you know, they could be in there. You're selling not so much a job as much as you are a return on their investment, because these larger companies are buying an enterprise, and they usually have a holding period estimation of about, 7 to 10 years, and then they're going to turn around and sell it. So they kind of look at things like terminal value. You know, what's it going to be when I go to sell this? How much can I make in the interim? You know, what kind of cash flow can I draw out? Those are different questions than what you have with a smaller transaction. And in many instances, they already have somebody who kind of manages that type of business, and they're going to throw this one into the hopper. So you've got somebody who's got, maybe 3 or 4 auto dealerships. Well, you know, now you've got a fifth one that you've got to oversee, versus somebody who's buying a one-off business and looking to find themselves a well-paying job.
Sure. It's interesting that you mentioned the whole job thing, because I've had some friends that have bought businesses that they were essentially buying a job. They were small businesses that only had, the one only had 2 employees, including my buddy, the buyer. And I joked with them because I said, buddy, there's jobs out there that are free. They pay you. But, he was happy there, so whatever.
Yeah, there are jobs, but then, you know, it's what does that job lead to? And, You know, is it going to be, you know, 40, 50, 60 hours a week? Yes, you don't have to go and pay for it. But then you also have, you know, all the vagaries with, you know, is this job going to last?
Sure.
You know, can you build on it? Can, you know, maybe you've got one and you learn how to do this, and maybe there's another location you can do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I've got that with a seller right now. They've got a successful business, and they want to sell it, and the cash flow is being generated on it. If it is, you know, it's a third more than the asking price of the business. So, you know, some people just want to have their own business. They don't want to be working for the man. They want to be
sure.
the man.
No, no, no. I completely understand. I completely understand. Yeah, I am one of those people, so it's all good.
Okay. Yeah.
So on your website, you talk about business brokerage and mergers and acquisition stuff that you have advertised on there. Can you tell us what the difference is?
Sure. Again, business brokerage would be the smaller type of engagements, you know, somewhere $400,000. It could be less. This is business value. It's not the gross revenues. You may have a business that, you know, is it's grossing, oh, I don't know, $2 million, and you're making $500,000 a year. You may have another business that's grossing $20 million, and you're making $100,000 a year. Which
sure.
one would you like to have? Well, obviously, it's the first one.
Right.
So it's business value. And when you get into business brokerage, smaller projects, $400,000 up to about $14 million. Mergers and acquisitions, going to be a more sophisticated buyer. And those start at $250,000. And we represent clients in that area all the way up to about $15 million, although occasionally we do have some that will ring the bell. I think the last one was like $24 million or something like that.
Wow.
So, you know, they get larger. And I think the biggest one I've dealt with was a generational transfer. It was $100 million. So they're just on the size of the deal.
Sure.
I consider myself a business transaction specialist, but I focus on business sales and business brokerage and merger and acquisition activities.
So you got to tell me a story then. On a $100 million deal, how are they getting funding for that? Is that just going to your bank, or is that?
Yeah, that was a generational transfer.
Okay.
And so there could be an awful lot of paper going on between the dad, and in this case, it was the son.
Okay.
So they're willing, you know, in that instance, you know, to put up a lot of the equity to make it happen. Now, this would also then be subject to approvals by third parties, their normal financial institutions, and in this case, the suppliers. That was a few years back. And but that was the largest one. We don't typically get that. We're not doing $100 million deals.
Okay.
You know, Goldman Sachs, you know, you have a $100 million company, they'll come into town for that.
Sure.
They aren't going to come into town for $20 million. It's
sure.
just they won't make it.
So let me ask you about the, I guess, I deal with smaller companies. When I say deal with, I guess just clients of ours and, just, I guess I don't know a bunch of owners of $20 million companies, I guess. I do know a lot of owners of $1 million companies or $500,000 companies.
Sure.
So with companies like that that are, let's just say, a lot of them are service-based, so they don't have a whole lot of assets. So is it tough to get lending for something like that?
No. It's all going to depend upon, you know, are they making money?
Sure.
You know, if you know, a smaller company, then you don't have to, you're not going to likely even deal with a PEG, a private equity group, certainly not a hedge fund.
Okay.
It could be a strategic buyer, but it's most of the time there, it's going to be just a buyer. And the difference between the two is a buyer is not really agnostic when it comes to where they want to be at. What, you know, no, I only want to deal with construction, or I only want to deal with transportation companies, or I only want to deal with retail. No. You're going to get buyers that are kind of, well, you know, hey, I'd take on a technology opportunity. Got a good retailer, you know, something that's unusual. Yeah, I can see myself running that. So it's a little bit different for them. They, you know, they're looking for a job, and it's going to be, you know, different than if you were selling this, you know, to a larger company, but they're all over in what they're looking at, and we deal with them. We try to find out, you know, up front, you know, if you're really dialed in as a strategic buyer, and it might not just be the type of company, it could also be where you want the company to be located. We represent clients all over Wisconsin, but occasionally, we get out of state. I had two last year that were down in Illinois. There's one that we're talking to in Montana. There's another one that is in the Twin Cities. I've sold companies in Michigan. And I was supposed to be talking with somebody out in New York City, but because of coronavirus 19, they're in the healthcare. I don't know if that's going to be anything that's going to, you know, be on the front burner, but
sure,
you know,
put that one on hold.
Yeah. So kind of a long answer to your question in there.
Sure. So one of the other things I wanted to know is how do these businesses, or how do people come up with valuation? Because I remember when I was selling my first company, I met with Score. Well, first I actually went to a valuation company, and they gave me a quote for many thousands of dollars to find the valuation. And right. I had this feeling in my head that that was a large percentage of the value of the company that I'd be spending just to figure out what the value was. I was like, I don't want to go down that road. Mm-hmm. And then I met with some consultants at Score, and I'm sitting with four different guys at this table, all experienced business people. And I got four different answers. So I was like, all right. And I guess I'm asking around, and eventually you come up with an average-ish. But I'm assuming that there's a more structured way to do it. Maybe there's not. I don't know. I imagine it's a little bit of art and science.
It is. You know, now you're kind of drawing upon my CVA designation. When you've got a business, you know, when you ask what's it worth, you really have to ask what's it worth if I do this. For example, you have a business owner and he's getting a divorce, and I'm being paternalistic. She has a business. She's getting a divorce from her husband. You know, she probably doesn't want a real high value on this. And so the divorce work, you know, you've got that. Another area where I see valuations done is with estate planning. And, you know, you can have an owner of a business and this thing could be worth, I don't know, $10 million, or let's just make it large enough for consequences. Let's say it's $20 million. You know, they know that there's going to be estate taxes. So they're going to be kind of looking at a different way of the valuation. We only do valuations if it is going to be an imminent sale. And then we're looking at the market. What is the market currently supporting? I don't make the market. The market does. It's up to me, though, to know, all right, you know, a year ago, you might have been able to get 8 turns, but today it's at 6, and the financing is a concern. You know, you may have to have more riding on this. So there could be seller financing. If you've got to cash out completely right now, you're not going to get as much as if you could let this thing ride for a bit. And you still get a good downstroke, But you know, you'll get top dollar if you can let it run for a little bit of time. So you have to know that going in, and you got to know what the seller's estimation of value is.
Sure. Interesting. Yeah, that part is kind of, it's fun. Do you ever get involved in the negotiations portion, or do you leave that up to the buyer and seller?
Oh, no, no, we do that. In fact, I ask the parties to, you know, I'll get asked about whether or not, you know, we're the only ones. We're not. But especially in the smaller transaction, I know what the issues are going to be. And I would just as soon deal with the buyers on those issues directly. It's not that we don't use CPAs, and I mentioned I am one. I still am one. It's not that we don't use attorneys, but I don't want attorneys to come in until we get to either an offer to purchase or a letter of intent. And the reason is that if you show up with your attorney, it forces the other side to get their attorney, and all of a sudden, we've got two attorneys in the room that are, you know, I've seen this happen too many times where the attorneys then, you know, they're dueling with one another on stuff. And it's not that it's immaterial, but it's maybe not at the right time. And, you know, leave that alone. We'll bring the attorneys in once we have an agreement reached. In principle. And I tell the sellers, keep the attorneys involved. I mean, keep them informed. You know, don't be afraid to ask them as we're going along. But as far as, you know, the face-to-face, if you show up with your attorney, you're gonna force the other side to do the same.
Sure.
So we work with them. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it does. It gets very expensive. We work with attorneys, we work with CPAs, we work with bankers. Occasionally, it might even be folks that specialize in software. A lot of companies have written their own code for various packages, and, you know, they have that. Occasionally, we may have to bring in somebody who is a specialist with, let's just say human resources. You know, depending upon the size of the company and if they've got other businesses, you know, what do they have to be aware of? And there could be a few other things. So we carry most of it, though. All that negotiations, you know, the counters, we work that out. We get all the way to the point where, okay, we've got a signed letter of intent or we've got a real meaningful offer to purchase, and then it goes to legal.
Okay. And then after legal, then it does go to, or then does it go to the bank if a bank is involved, or?
It's simultaneous.
Okay.
You know, you're, because the legal is, they're the parties that are doing, you know, the attorneys are doing the definitive purchase agreement, you know, where you're laying out all of the expectations and the terms.
Okay.
Now there are some that are just, you know, we use, you know, documents that we've prepared, but most of the time, you know, they'll go through it and, you know, here's what this transitional assistance regarding the seller, here's what we're expecting. You know, sometimes sellers might have to stay involved with the business for 2 weeks and others might be there for, you know, 3 months, you know, depending upon the size of the business. The larger it is, the more longer the time frame is.
Sure.
But you have to define that, and that's usually where you do it. Although, having said that, the very last transaction I did, we were just using agreements that we had put together. This one here was done on a business brokerage side, but we use the terms that were put forth in the offer to purchase.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. So how long does it take something like this to happen, start to finish?
Oh, boy. Good question. You know, it can take probably, you know, when I tell clients this, sometimes I lose them, but it's 2 to 3 years.
Wow. All right.
Yeah. Now that's on the far end. I've got I think the shortest one. I did this one. It was over on Johnson Street in Madison. It was less than 90 days, less than 3 months,
sure,
from start to finish. But that doesn't happen all that often. Usually, we won't take a project on if, for example, we can't have at least a year. I'm not going to go through and do a whole bunch of work, and then, the seller says, well, I got to move, or that health concern that I told you about, it's kicking in. I got to get out. I'm giving it to my son. I'm just going to shut the doors. Whatever. We have to have at least a year to sell a business to be able to harvest, the full enterprise value. Time is your worst enemy when you're doing this. If you have to do it absolutely tomorrow, it will cost you. And if I have time, I can work this with various buyers, whomever they might be, to get the best possible dollar and the terms.
Mm.
They're both. It's not just the financial end of it. It's the other stuff, especially if you get into something where you've got an earnout. But if you've got to do it tomorrow, well, I can find a buyer for you, but you're going to be getting pennies on the dollar.
Sure. All right. Just, I suppose, like with any negotiation, right? If you have to go through with the transaction, you have less leverage.
Yes. Yeah. You just, you have to.
Sure.
You don't have time to bring it back out to market to see if, is there any way we could sweeten the pot from some of the other interested parties?
Sure. So who, I guess it's a changing market now. So who are the buyers for businesses today?
Well, we work with buyers, and we would define them as that group that, they want to buy a business. They don't really know, what kind of business, nor do they know where it's at. So that's a generic, buyer. A strategic buyer, they certainly know the nature of the company. They've got deep industry experience, and it's not unusual for them to say, yeah, we're looking for a business, but we want to be in the Milwaukee area, the Racine, Kenosha, and this is it, manufacturing then. So you have strategic buyers and buyers. You get into private equity groups. Now, private equity groups are specialized. They don't all just take on anything. Some are into healthcare. Others are into just software. Others, it might be, garbage, refuse centers, or recycling. They specialize in areas, and that's what they're looking to do, is to augment their existing portfolio with attractive targets. So those are the groups that we get involved with. As I mentioned, there are hedge funds, but they don't start you're not going to get a KKR here, in on a deal. It's probably less than $500 million. So they're
wow.
not likely to be a buyer of the businesses that we typically see.
Sure. So a private equity company that was going after a specific type of business, are they going to pay a premium because they're on a shorter timeline as a buyer?
They wouldn't pay a premium.
Okay.
Who might pay a premium, would be a strategic buyer. They're looking for a very specific set of circumstances. A strategic or a private equity group, they usually have it, and they're looking for, we've all heard the term low-hanging fruit. Remember I said, their expectation is 10 years, and that's their you know, they're going to get out. And so it's not a long, long time holding this. They're looking for real good, attractive buys. Bring these things along, maybe do some selling and buying between themselves, and then put the thing back out on the market. But they're not going to give you a real handsome premium. You get more likely to get that out of a strategic buyer.
Gotcha. Okay. So one of the big questions that we have for people doing what you do is, how do you get paid for your services?
Well, number one, we call it a success fee. It's not a commission, although it is based upon that. In our sell-side projects, we'll figure out what our involvement is going to be. And we estimate that in hours, and then we track it. But that's for our own internal purposes. We set forth, you know, some type of specific fee and for the sale of the business, and it's usually a percentage. For smaller deals, you know, it can be as little as 6%, and then it goes all the way up. You know, larger deals or larger commission structures, it might be as much as 12. And but you're looking at you know, different parts of this. Number one, you know, how difficult is it going to be to sell this? What's the odds of getting financing? That kind of thing. So we do structure that a little differently than others. Now, if we're working on a buy side engagement, there what we'll do is we'll charge on the basis of time involved. So it's a T&M. You know, you get 10 hours. Okay. Here's your bill for that. Because we don't know, you know, you're out to buy a business, we'll assist you with that versus helping somebody who already has one and then selling it for them.
Sure.
All right.
What percentage would you say, I guess, buyers versus sellers that you work with? Is it 50-50 or does it vary, or do you lean one way or the other?
No. It would be, it's usually going to be 70% sell side,
okay,
about 20% buy side, and then 10% of our revenues are going to come in from consulting engagements, you know, generational transfers, business transfers, just assisting ownership with the you know, how much is this business worth, or can we train the people here to take it over for us?
Gotcha. Okay.
That's about 10%. So 70-20-10.
That's fair.
Yeah.
So in your business, is it you, or do you have other people working for you?
There are others. I've got one individual focuses in on larger, construction type of companies, some development. And then I've got another individual working with us now on the smaller end. We seem to be picking up a considerable amount of ticks in this area. I'm not talking about the insect, tick of a clock.
Right.
You know, but... we have more activity going on in that area of late. And, you know, it's kind of shifted. Our focus might be certainly Madison. It's the surrounding counties, but it's now getting us down towards the Rockford corridor. And we're even finding, you know, it's southeast Wisconsin, Lake Geneva, Delavan area, you know, Fontana, all the way down to the state line. So
sure. All right.
Area. Yeah.
So have they always worked with you, or did you
No.
go find them?
Yeah, we found them, and he's got experience. And so, you know, we said, let's partner up and, you know, we'll see how this works out. I mentioned earlier, we have others, but these are more contract employees, whether it's IT, information systems. There's also some marketing that we could bring to bear if we had to. We get into human resources. So, you know, there are some others that we could draw from to assist in the success of the deal.
Sure. So if I were a buyer, I was someone that just wanted to buy a business from whatever, is my first thought to go with someone like you, or do I just start hunting around on the internet, or where do you find people, I guess, from a buyer's point of view? At what position are they in when they talk to you, or when should they talk to you?
Well, okay, you got a host of questions in there. When should they think about selling a business? The moment
buying
a business. Ownership. Yeah, oh, a buyer. Well, I'm thinking of a seller now, but a buyer, you know, when should they think about buying a business? You know, whenever that thought comes up. You know, maybe they're already working and they get laid off, or the company they were working for is sold. You know, now they need a business opportunity. They may have some cash.
Sure.
And, you know, how do we work with them, or how do we find them? Most of our work comes in from referrals. We make an effort to get in front of attorneys, in front of bankers, and in front of CPAs, and to tell them about the Ashford Group and, you know, our successes and what we've done, because they get asked questions from their clients. That's where we're at. Unfortunately, this is still an industry where, you know, you have to know who you're dealing with. And referrals
sure.
make a great deal of difference.
Right.
And, you know, it shortens up our process in terms of, well, how did you become aware of us? If it's just, you know, word on the street, an advertising piece, we've got to do a lot more work. If
sure.
I know who the attorney is that referred it, well, then I can put a call in to the, you know, to the lawyer, and I can ask, okay, how long have you been working with him? What kind of, you know, how are they to work with? Are they difficult, argumentative, you know, that kind of stuff? Because that will come out later on.
Sure.
You know, when I'm showing either a buyer or a seller to their counterpart, you know, if you're difficult, it's not going to take too long for you to tick off, you know, somebody on the other side of the desk.
Sure.
And this isn't going anywhere, so I've wasted
right.
my time.
That's fair. How many? You raise an interesting point here. Of the deals that people sign on with you, what percentage are you guys actually closing?
Our closing rate is at 80%. So,
okay.
You know,
is that good? I assume it's good. I don't know.
Yeah. It is. It's very good. Most of the firms are going to be in the 30s. Occasionally, you might find somebody that gets into the very low 40s.
You're kidding.
No. I'm
wow.
Not.
Oh, that's brutal.
Yeah. Well,
oh, that's brutal.
Yeah. Well, it just shows you how much time then has been wasted.
Yeah.
You know, if you're just out there to take on listings and, you know, there's no real focus on getting it done, my gosh, you know, all you're doing is generating paperwork. I don't need to practice anymore. I think
no.
I know what I'm doing. So that's, you know, not to be egotistical, but, you know, that's where, you know, experience really comes to bear. I mean, when you've been
sure.
doing something for 30 years, you should have figured out, okay, how do you get through this and do an efficient evaluation of this business, find out where that punk wood is, what's it going to take to sell it, what would be your approach, and then get it done.
Sure. I like that. I like that a lot. That sounds cool.
Yeah.
Mark, this time has flown by. I love this topic. Buying
okay.
and selling, I don't know, buying and selling anything is kind of fun. Just the negotiation aspect and the working with other business professionals is always cool. So I appreciate you being on the show here.
Well, I do, and I hope that you know, if the, anybody has any questions, you know, they can call me, you know, at the Ashford Group, and, you know, I'll be happy to answer those. And, you know, if there's a, if there's something there and it makes sense to meet, well, then we will do that.
Sure.
So
can you
appreciate the opportunity?
Sure. Do you have a website?
Sure. The website, the Ashford Group, .com. My email is McNally@AshfordBusinessBrokers.com. And my phone number is 608-334-5439.
That is awesome. I appreciate you being on the show, Mark.
James, thank you very much. I hope you have a good weekend, and you know, you enjoy yourself over there in Sun Prairie. And
right.
We'll see you around.
We'll make it work. This has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Coming to you remotely, but usually at the Sun Prairie Community Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. If you are listening to this on the web, please like, subscribe, and share. My name is James Kademan, and Authentic Business Adventures is brought to you by Calls on Call, offering call answering and receptionist services for small businesses across the country on the web at callsoncall.com, as well as Draw In Customers Business Coaching, offering business coaching services for entrepreneurs in all stages of their business on the web at drawincustomers.com. And of course, The Bold Business Book, a book for the entrepreneur in all of us, available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, as well as our guest, Mark McNally, the CEO and founder of the Ashford Group. Mark, thank you again. This has been extremely informative.
Thank you, James.
Find us airing on 103.5 Wednesdays at 1 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m., as well as at sunprairiemediacenter.com. Past episodes can be found morning, noon, and night at the podcast link, found at drawincustomers.com. Thank you for listening. We will see you next week. I want you to stay awesome. And if you do nothing else, enjoy your business.